123 Tucson, welcome back to the show. Hour two here on Monday. You're listening to the Creative City Show, where daily we share the stories and strategies of the people and ideas shaping Tucson's future. Along the way, we envision, debate, and discuss the issues and themes that will get us there. And as always, I'm your host, Zach Yenser, and grateful for your listening. I like to say that I'll do my best to bring as quality of news and talk as I can every day. You bring the trust and local listening, and that's a partnership worth having as we do 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk every day. So thank you. Thank you for your calls in the last hour. We started off the show by talking about road repair, about Pima County's budget proposal to set aside $26 million for road repairs, and basically where our conversation went was that while this fund is a drop in the bucket, this is the general direction where we should be going, that these funds should be, that these road repairs should be general fund driven, that we have to move away, not just county, not just city, but really it's a state and a country issue, honestly. We got into that a little bit, that we can't bond or tax our way out of these issues, because we are spending billions of dollars around the country on both current repair and new road repair, which is a different conversation, or new roads, which is a different conversation for another day. But I had some great calls around that, talking about how Pima has a little bit slower percentage population growth, how when it comes to certain employment statistics or population statistics, there is some good news when it comes to the county, but overall, we could be growing at a faster pace. Our different sectors that we have employed here could be growing at a faster pace in keeping up with different parts of our region and the state. And that, again, overall, I stated my opinion that, again, whether it's businesses, whether it's residents, whether it's visitors, everyone in those groups, well, not everyone, that you can't say everyone, but most people that I hear from or talk to all say that the quality of roads and infrastructure and transportation is really important to their long-term staying in the region. And so if we have to figure out a way to provide a community where people want to stay and come along, long term, certainly roads, and also I think public safety tie into that in a big way. So if we had to tackle one area where if we could get it right, well, we could retain a population that would be able to pay more into the county via property taxes and so on and so forth. Roads is one of them. My special spin on that was looking at some numbers from the Census Bureau, looking at some national numbers. Again, I'm not the first one to say any of what I just said, but those were things that popped into my mind when I looked at this article. If you're just joining us again, we're going to talk to the American Federation for Children coming up in just a minute, waiting for that call in. And then I'm looking forward to Amanda Bruno coming into the studio in person in a few minutes to talk smart cities. It's kind of a big term, a big idea. It's not a new one. It's extremely popular in kind of the urban planning and development realm. I've talked about it in phrase on this show, but I want to know more about it. And she was in New York City last week, and she just came back, I think, last evening. So she's going to talk more about it as well. I spent all my time talking in the Talking Tucson hour of last hour talking about this Pima County proposal. But another thing that's been on my radar recently, and I thought I would share because the conversation is heating up, is I-11 and I-10. And so just broadly, there is a proposal for an I-11 connect that would make trucking and transportation and travel times between the Nogales here in Arizona a lot quicker. And there's now conversation of, well, do we pass an I-11 through, or do we just take the existing I-10 and expand it out? And that's been a new conversation that's been on my radar. Someone kind of prompted me with that. Last week, but now it's in in the news. And I think that was on Arizona Public Media is where I saw that. Let me go ahead and pull that up out of the files. I always have something to talk about here, but so interesting proposal. And then that would kind of impact my neighborhood, as I understand it, because they build more lanes onto the 10 instead of a new I-11. So interesting stuff there, and always themes to talk about. The new Banner Hospital Tower is open for business. They've got some amazing technology happening out of there. What I heard was they have kind of the lighting and the whole environment set around the surgery experience. So when you go in for surgery, there's kind of a timeout period where you assess what the surgery is and who's there, and the lights change to that. The lights change to the waiting room. Just really incredible new technology in that new 9-story patient tower that just opened up over at Banner. Also met their new CEO the other day. Good guy. I think he's new in from, is it Chicago? Glad to have him here, and I'm looking forward to seeing this new space. So that's there. I'm trying to find that article on the I-10 and I-11. I will find it a little bit later, but yeah. So let's make sure that we can go ahead and get Steve on the phone. Let's go to a break and see if we can grab him and then dive into our conversation here. You're on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Come on back for my conversation with the American Federation for Children. Tucson, welcome back to the Creative City Show here on this Monday afternoon, where we are covering everything from the county to roads to population growth, smart cities, and then this segment of the show where I'm talking with my guest on the line, Steve Smith, about empowerment scholarships and the American Federation for Children. Sir, thanks for calling in. I appreciate your time.
Hey, Zach, how are you? Appreciate you having me on, too.
Yeah, absolutely. So first, I'm just curious, can you explain the American Federation for Children and kind of what the organization does, what its mission and vision is?
Absolutely. So American Federation for Children, or, you know, AFC, we're known as the nation's leader in school choice. And President Trump's current education secretary is Secretary Betsy DeVos. And she was the former chairman of AFC. So we believe in school choice, and a lot of people ask, you know, I keep hearing about school choice, but what is school choice? And a lot of people don't really know what it means. And frankly, all it really means is giving parents control over what schools their kids go to. Now, you and I would think, well, can't they kind of do that already? Well, yes and no. And so AFC, what we try to do is empower parents to say, hey, you know what is in the best interest of your kids. You get control of their education, and you send them to the school that fits their strengths or weaknesses or needs or whatever you're looking for. And that's our mission. And it's primarily to help low-income families. We hear so often that, you know, when you're stuck in a low-income neighborhood and the one surest ticket out of town is a good education, well, we want to make sure every family, every kid has that opportunity.
For sure. And I have a question about that maybe a little bit later on, but one of the main pieces that is advocated for, supported, as I understand, by AFC are these things. And this was, as recently talked about on the 2018 ballot, even was empowerment scholarship accounts. I'm seeing a couple of numbers. About 5,000 children are now using it, or
About
6,000, but over 250,000 children technically qualify. Could you speak to that?
Absolutely. So empowerment scholarship, you know, I served in the Senate in Arizona, and one of the first bills that I've sponsored and we got passed was these things called empowerment scholarship accounts. And basically what it is, it's kind of what I talked about earlier. The parents had control over the dollars that are allocated to their kids' education. So right now in Arizona, you always hear these things called per pupil funding, right? and how much money is allocated for every one of our 1.2 million K-12 students in the state. Well, that number is about, you know, a little north of $10,000. And what we say is parents get control of 90% of, like, the state portion of that money, and they get that money literally on a state-issued debit card through the Arizona Department of Education. And the parents now can say, huh, do I want my kid to go to the government-assigned district school where I live based on my zip code? Maybe. Do I want them to go to a religious school instead, or a private school here, or a school for, like, maybe their special needs child that deals specifically with that need? Do I want to do schooling at home? Whatever their answer is, they get that money through that ESA, or Empowerment Scholarship account, and they pay tuition with it. They pay for books and uniforms, tutors, whatever it is that they need. But again, it all hinges on it. It's up to the parent and what they think is the best education model for their child. And we just give them the power to do it.
For sure. And when you look at the 5,000 children who are now using it, that scholarship, if you had to kind of give a picture of who is using it, special needs, is it children living on tribal lands, foster children, all the above, none of the above, if you had to paint a picture of those 5,000, who would they be?
Yes, and good question, because the ESA program is only available to a few segments of our population, which is unfortunate. It's just the way it is. And those groups are, yes, if you have a special needs child. If your child is attending a failing school, which unfortunately there's a lot of them in Arizona. If your child has been in the foster program, if they live on tribal lands, if they're a military family, there's a lot of different categories. What you referenced earlier as being on the ballot in the last election, there was a ballot initiative, Prop 305, to extend ESAs to all children. So the thinking was, well, if it's good enough for military families and special needs families and failing school kids and others, well, why shouldn't every kid have it? The problem was it was a very poorly written ballot initiative. So you had good school choice supporters of the initiative voting against it. And the reason is because that initiative put a cap on how many Arizona children could actually go in the program. And a lot of people, me included, think, well, there shouldn't be any cap. No parent should be limited. And so, but that's what it is. But those are some of the eligibility categories. But certainly they can go to our website, or they can text us information. We'll give any of your listeners all the details if they qualify as well.
Absolutely. And could you give that web address as well for more information?
Yeah, it's AZ, short for Arizona, AZESA.org. Or they can text, you know, everybody likes to text. So if you just text the letters ABC, send ABC to 52886. And again, that's ABC to 52886. June 1st, so in about 10 days, is the deadline for parents to receive this money to help pay for their full upcoming year of education. So for the 2019-2020 school year, if you're a parent out there, you want to take advantage of this, you want to take the state-allocated money that's allocated to your child's education, and if you want to take control of it and send your kid to the school of your choice, effectively we say you can send your kid to private school for free, because most of the private schools fall under the ESA amount, please text ABC to the number 52886, or visit us at azesa.org. We got a ton of parents out there that can help you. But it's, again, it's empowering the parents. Parents know best what's best for their kids, and that's all we're trying to do.
Absolutely. I'm asking this question because my background growing up was where kind of this school choice was actually in collaboration with the public school system, which was kind of interesting. I won't get into that at the moment. But how do you see this parental choice fitting in with, you know, with the kind of the public school system? Are they supportive of each other in terms of do they help kind of balance out communities and provide opportunities, or kind of what is American Federation for Children's view of this opportunity as it fits in within the context of public school?
Well, you know, unfortunately, there's a lot that you know disagree with this notion of empowering parents, which I think on the face of it in a capitalistic society is odd. You know, we don't say people can only go to one doctor. We don't say you can only go to, you know, one restaurant. We don't say you can only have one health insurance plan. No. As Americans, you got to be able to choose what you want the best. And that's what we feel about education. But I'm sure there's plenty in the education unions and plenty, that don't support this. And the reason is every kid has a dollar sign on top of their head about that per pupil funding that I mentioned. So the more kids in your school, the more money. Well, you could probably see that a lot of schools aren't keen on programs that allow kids to move out of their monopoly system. And we say, well, we don't care about monopolies. We care about results for families. What is the best place where this child can learn? And if it's a public district school, I love it. Stay there. If it's not, then the parents should be able to choose with their tax dollars. Don't forget, this is their tax money that you and I get taxed in our property tax, in our sales tax, in our in our income tax, and in all the taxes that we pay go in the big education bucket. This simply allows the parent to reach in that bucket and say, I'm going to decide, not my zip code, I'm going to decide where my money is going and what's the best education model. And right. So that's what we believe is the best way to go.
If you're just joining us, you're listening to my interview with Steve Smith from the American Federation for Children, talking about empowerment scholarship accounts, ESAs, that can be used to pay for private school or other schooling option, tuition, uniforms, tutoring, books, and more, all funded through the Arizona Department of Education. And the deadline for signing up is June 1st. Did I get that right?
That's right. So I always tell people, don't wait to the very end. It's a simple application process, but we have lots of fantastic parent advocates that can help you through the process. Again, just go to the website, azesa.org, azesa.org, or text ABC to 52886, and a parent advocate will help you walk through the program. But it's literally one of the best things you can do for your child, and you customize and build the education that you, with your tax dollars, have the right and that have paid for.
Right, and I don't know if I brought this up before, but it's funded through the Arizona Department of Education, and you talked about how it's a scholarship account program that's been in place. It was on the ballot to be expanded in 2018. How long has it been funded through the Arizona Department of Education? Just a curiosity question.
Well, it's since 2011 is when we passed the bill initially in the legislature. And so the Department of Education job is to take the taxpayer money that you and I put in the system, and then they distribute it. So when the parents call in and say, hey, I want to take advantage of this ESA program, the Department of Education is mandated by law to process the funds through, give the funds to the parent. Again, the parents literally get a debit card with their child's allocation on it. And they swipe that debit card at education institutions or whatever it is at education marketplaces and pay for all the things that they need for the kids' education. So all of that runs through the Department of Education, yes.
Gotcha. Steve, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate that overview of the empowerment scholarship accounts. Again, for more information, to get in touch with someone who can take the next step, text 123 to 52886 or visit azesa.org. All good?
That's right. Yeah, you're right. They can either text 123 or ABC. We make it simple.
That's right.
Either 123 or ABC to 52886. Yes, but thank you, Zach. I appreciate it. We're just trying to let as many parents know as possible. Take control of your kids' education. Do a great thing for them. And I appreciate it, Jack. Zach, keep up the great work. God bless you.
Thanks, Steve, for making the time to come on with us and talking about that deadline. If you're just listening, that wraps up my conversation with Steve Smith from the American Federation for Children, again, talking about empowerment scholarship accounts. Again, if that is of interest to you or you have further questions, head to azesa.org. And thanks again to Steve Smith. That wraps up this segment, a little bit of informational segment there for you. When we come back from the break, my conversation with Amanda Bruno, just back from Smart Cities in New York, talking about the term, what does it mean, what are the implications for our city, and I'm curious to figure out what information she provides, what it could mean for Tucson. So we'll brainstorm that, we'll talk about that when we come back from the break. You're on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Good morning, Tucson. Welcome back to the show here on 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk, as we are kicking off our Monday with the hour we always do. We talk Tucson. And today that meant going over Pima County's board proposal for $26 million from the general fund for road repair. We talked about the pros and cons and background of that and had a good time doing it. Then we talked to Steve Smith from the American Federation for Children. And now my interview with Amanda Bruno about smart cities. I'm looking forward to getting into it. Amanda is just back from a week in New York City, which makes us all the more, makes me all the more grateful that you're here, because the coffee is that more precious. If you know what I'm saying, you're just in and back in Arizona for the first morning, but I'm glad that you made it back. You made it back for the interview, and it's good to have you here. I think it's been a long time in coming.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here and kind of like nerd out with you about everything that I just learned, because it was just information overload, and I'm so stoked.
Awesome. Well, let's set this up to make sure that we kind of know why you're here. And so who are you? You're going through a master's program at the U of A. Give us a little bit about Amanda. Who's Amanda Bruno?
Sure. So I'm actually originally from New York, not the city.
Oh,
I'm
are
from,
you? Okay.
Yeah, from Long Island, but we kind of claim New York City, even though we're not really from there. Right now, yeah, I'm a master's student at the University of Arizona. I'm getting my degree in public administration. My specific focus is in economic development, so I'm really interested in accessible and affordable housing, specifically as it relates to Southern Arizona. I love Tucson. I've been here my entire adult life, so yeah.
Yeah. Well, we share a common interest in that focus for sure, which has given us a lot of good information in the past. So you're from New York City. But how, what was the connection between maybe your program and the U of A to spending time in New York City around the smart cities concept?
Yeah. So I'm always kind of looking for, I guess, like supplemental education opportunities. What else can I do besides just sit in a classroom and learn? So I really love conferences as an opportunity to get some more information about your field, because it brings together so many people, so many brilliant brains were in that room. So I was looking specifically for something in New York because I kind of wanted to go home and see my family as well. So I kind of stumbled upon this one and it looked really good. And so I actually reached out to one of my professors, Mike Letcher, and asked him about it. And he teaches a whole section in one of his classes about it. So it's this concept that I have newly been introduced to. And just as soon as I started looking it up, I was like, this is great. Like, I really want to go. The speakers look really great. And it was just, it was very in line with my interests, but it wasn't just about like city management or housing. It was about technology and public sector and private sector. And it was just bringing everybody together that you could possibly think of.
Wow. So I've used the term, this is one of the reasons I was excited to have you on this show, is this term has been on my radar for a while. I've talked about it a lot on the show, but from a very surface level, it's a kind of a big term. And I wondered if you came away from the conference having kind of a definition that works, right? So anyone who's listening with any level of kind of knowledge of this, well, what's the easy way to explain what is a smart city?
Yeah, so it is a very multifaceted concept. But I think the easiest way that I can flesh it out is just to say it doesn't necessarily need to be a city in the way that we think of it as like a really dense urban center. So it refers to just any kind of community that uses information and communication technologies and any other means to improve the quality of life, efficiency, and just how smoothly your services are offered to citizens. So it's essentially a collaboration between every possible stakeholder. So private sector, public sector, citizens. Somebody actually used the term city makers instead of citizens, which really resonated with me.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's how can we leverage technology to meet the needs of the stakeholders in our city, specifically the needs of the people who live there. So this isn't necessarily about like really sustainable green cities that are making a ton of money for private businesses. It's a lot bigger than that.
So I'm looking at the agenda that you sent me for the week, and we're talking everything from climate innovation to self-driving artificial intelligence to there's one segment here or one session here, preparing your people for the coming of the robots, urban tech versus smart cities, which comes first, building cyber resilience in smart cities. So there's really this, it seems like this combination of how do we use technology to solve people problems, right? I don't think that this is probably either A, what was talked about a ton at the conference, or what we would want to maybe implement in Tucson, but I think it's Abu Dhabi that put in place a couple years ago. I know it sounds ridiculous, but I'm going to say it, happiness meters, right? Where people could walk by and at any given moment, there would be a kiosk where they could enter how they felt, right? It was emoji-based. It was really quick. And were they happy? Were they sad? Were they content? Were they rushed? Were they bored? Had they just spent an hour sitting at the subway and it was annoying? It kind of gauged in real time all around the city, how are people feeling? And it allowed city leadership to kind of have this comprehensive view and go, okay, well, this area is really unhappy most of the time. So what can we do to improve services? There's connections between driverless cars and stoplights, and how do even non-driver or how to driver cars with drivers in them, how can you connect cars with transportation infrastructure? All this stuff had to be covered, right? I'm trying to wrap my mind around smart cities.
Yeah, it is very much a solutions-based approach. So, like, technology is a huge part of it, but at the very root of it is meeting the needs of the people who live in that city. So, yeah, if you can identify an entire section of your community that isn't happy for one reason or the other, I mean, it starts with a conversation, identifying those needs, and then implementing the solutions to meet those needs, be it technology or otherwise.
Right. So there's kind of an evolution of smart cities that they talked about. There's a 1.0 through 4.0. Could you walk us through the different levels that some cities may be when it comes to smart cities? And most communities tend to fall into one of those iterations. Tell us about that and maybe which one you think Tucson is in.
Yeah, absolutely. So this concept was, this smart city evolution was presented, and it's four tiers. So the very first one is technology is driven by companies. So this is a very early phase. Basically, just this is using technology, and it's kind of the main purpose behind this is just to get like the companies who produce these technologies out there benefiting from this. But the 2.0, and this is where most cities fall, and is in this second tier. So this is technology motivated rather than technology driven, and this is driven by a community. So this is more in line with what does our community need. And then your smart city 3.0, that's going to be completely citizen and user centric. It's locally co-created and it's managed by entire communities. And then your very last tier, I guess this is essentially the goal. You in this tier, your 4.0, you have a measurable ecosystem that is enhanced by the collective intelligence of the citizens and the users. So most communities that are trying to implement a smart city concept are going to be in that 2.0 tier. I would include Tucson in that. I can't speak specifically to any like things in Tucson that I think fall into this category, but I would put us in the 2.0 tier.
Gotcha. I want to come back to that in a second. If you're just joining us, you're listening to my interview with Amanda Bruno, a master's candidate from the University of Arizona, who is just returning back to the city from a conference in New York centered around smart cities. What does the term mean? What is it? And what could it mean for Tucson? So let's keep trying to break it down because it's such a big concept. When you were there, what was maybe one or two examples of a smart city that stood out to you that was interesting? Just to give us an example of what this would look like.
Yeah, so there were actually a lot of representation from Europe, specifically Amsterdam and Helsinki were two cities that were really just on the cutting edge of this and really trying to roll out this concept as best as they could. So, I mean, I think in terms of like the evolution of this concept, they're definitely in a higher tier than Tucson or even New York. But everything that they're doing as far as their city planning, they're utilizing this concept in everything. So it's for them, it's green spaces, it's circular economies, it's sustainable infrastructure and sustainable transportation. And it is just like conversations with the community over and over again, all over the place.
Definitely. You used words that I learned just from you saying them. So what's a circular economy?
Yeah, circular economy really cool. So a circular economy is kind of like from the very source until you're done with your production. Like you're using everything. So you're sourcing locally and sustainably. And then from there, anything you're producing, whatever waste you have left, you're kind of putting it back into the line mm-hmm. for use elsewhere. So it's very limited waste. It's very sustainable sourcing of materials. And it's very very people driven. So what's going to do the most good with the least amount of waste and what, and it's just that's the main thing. It's just eliminating waste. Everything's being used and it really, if you look up a visual of it, it's a perfect little circle and it just flows really well.
Hmm. What, you used a couple of other phrases. What is sustainable infrastructure? So I feel like those are two words that get overused and underexplained and poorly explained. And sustainability is just a word that is just, what do you make of that word anymore, right? It got hot and then it got misused and blah. So sustainable infrastructure, what is that? What do you mean by that?
So sustainable infrastructure, I think in this context is kind of just limited waste, limited carbon emissions, and kind of just it can reach a lot of people. So a big part of this was inclusivity, getting rid of transportation deserts, and rolling out more environmentally friendly methods of transportation. So it's connectedness, it's clean, and it is just meeting the needs of people. So I know in New York, for example, they just rolled out their own version of the Green New Deal. So that passed statewide. And a big thing for them is they want to roll out electric school buses. They want to make they're closing a lot of their gas and oil fueled power plants in favor of renewable sources and batteries. Right. So anything that is kind of cleaning up the energy that we're using. And then in this context, also reaching the people who need it.
Right. So as an example, I floated this idea out during our What If Hours, kind of crazy big idea, moonshot idea, conversation here on the show, of connecting the Oro Valley Innovation Center with the UA Tech Park via light rail, right? Of mm-hmm. expanding the light rail. So it'd be a mass transit option for connecting the people and ideas between the two spots instead of the long, arduous drive up Oracle back and forth every day. Would that be an example of sustainable infrastructure, theoretically?
Yeah, I think it would be. So yeah, because two things there. I think the light rail part of that makes it a lot more efficient. So you don't have individuals in cars every day making that trip because that is a hike. And then it's also connecting those two big hubs of ideas and innovation. So that's definitely at the crux of the idea of sustainable transportation and infrastructure. I think a light rail system, we desperately need that.
Right. Well, I mean, we have we should talk about that. So what we don't have, I wouldn't call it a trolley. It's not, it used to be kind of a trolley. Mm-hmm. We have now a streetcar.
Right.
I think to me, a streetcar is a level above a trolley. That's just my opinion. But we don't have a light rail. And I lived in a community for a few years that had the light rail. And it was amazing how it connected university and downtown. It was a massive part of the metropolitan area. I mean, it was huge. And the light rail connected everybody around that. I envision that someday for Tucson. I think it's the next step.
And, that's a thought that I kept coming back to when I was in New York. I was commuting between Central Long Island and New York City. And so that's about an hour and 20-minute train ride. But the train system in New York, it stretches from Eastern Long Island to New York City. And then from there, you can go to New Jersey. You can go to Connecticut. You can go kind of all over the Northeast. And so it is a very well-connected region. I think when you live there, you don't appreciate it as much, but I was kind mm-hmm. of able to see it from new eyes this time around. And I was an hour and 20-minute train ride, that's Tucson to Phoenix. And yet the idea of that connection is just so, I think, out of reach for us for the time being. But I mean, in New York, and certainly New York is not the only example, but the one I'm most familiar with, that exists and it's huge. I mean, it makes so many things possible that wouldn't be otherwise.
Right. So as you're in New York City talking about smart cities, it's an international summit, people from all over the world. What are a couple of the themes coming down the pike for cities that maybe surprised you or interested you as a city, as a metropolitan area? What are some things that maybe Tucson should be looking ahead into the future about that we aren't thinking about yet?
I was really struck in particular by the various conversations around inclusivity in this concept. So for this, it wasn't so much about like socioeconomic status. That was part of it, but a lot of it was centered around catering to folks with disabilities, physical disabilities. So making sure that all of our buildings are accessible, transportation is accessible, and that folks have those options to get around if, we just need to incorporate like different points of access for people who access buildings differently. There were a couple of other things. So specifically, the idea of like smart citizens, smart people, was a big part of this. And so there was a lot of talk about educating a workforce beyond just a college education. I know we talk a lot about that here in Tucson, getting more vocational training or giving folks like college credit for their military service. Just different ways that we can get somebody qualified on paper to do a job that they know how to do or that they can learn how to do without necessarily having to sit through a four-year degree program. So that came up quite a bit. And then there were a couple of conversations about the cannabis industry and how cities might be able to leverage that, especially in terms of like...
I had a caller in the first hour talk about it as an income stream.
Yeah,
for communities. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay.
I'm connecting the dots as you talk. Go ahead.
Absolutely. Yeah. So there were a couple, and I was actually really surprised to see that that session on there two times. There were two different ones. But that's our present, that's our future, right? So I think leveraging that, especially moving from like a black market to a legal market and using all that income to better our cities is huge. And I think hopefully we're moving in that direction.
Interesting. And it's going to be interesting to see how, like in Colorado, it plays out, there's a huge income stream reason for it, but then also like, you know, weighing social costs and things like that. I know that 2 or 3 years past legalizing, you know, cannabis, it's interesting conversations. We're going to see where it goes. Micro-colleges is something I've talked about on the air before, believe it or not. It's really cool talking to you to feel like, you know, these issues are a little bit out there for Tucson, but they're not out there at a global scale. So micro-colleges are something that they're talking about coming down the road, which are exactly what you said. And if a university says there's this new area of work or life or whatever, we need to develop a degree program around it. That's a 6-year cycle, right? It's 2 years to develop it, 4 years to get your first cohort out. From thought to end, minimum 6 years to develop infrastructure at a university level around to a certain course of study or degree program. But when you look at whether it's an innovative company or smart cities or the needs of a workforce, you need ways where you can develop a curriculum and train in a 3 to 5 month year period. And so they're calling that term micro-colleges. Is that what you're talking about, where you're developing education that's more fine-tuned to workforce development, a little faster on its feet, a little faster in how it iterates?
Yeah, I don't know that term specifically came up, but I think it's basically the same idea. So I know there was a gentleman from CUNY, so that's the City University of New York system, who was talking about what they were doing specifically to kind of like fast-track people out into the workforce. And so he did talk specifically about giving people credit for military service or about just giving people credentials for training that they already had that they didn't officially have certifications for. So I think the starting point with that for them was partnering with local companies just to identify the needs as far as what do you need from us in giving you a workforce. So definitely starting there, and then they kind of just working really closely with students and kind of getting rid of everything that... And I love education. I have a college degree. I'm going to be in school for a bit still. But I recognize that like not every class you take in college is useful, right? So I spent my first 2 years in college like trying to figure out what I wanted to major in, and in the meantime taking classes that like I don't remember anything from. And so what they're doing is just trying to get rid of that piece and just develop like real technical skills, everything from like HVAC to computer science to anything. So really it's just, it's different based on every community, but it starts with identifying the needs of the companies in your area.
And I just want to take a moment and shout out something that I think Tucson is doing great around this, and that is the work of Lee Lambert over at Pima Community College. He is reshaping Pima to do exactly what you're talking about, and I just think that's worthy of talking about. It's interesting that education often takes a hit during a good economy. Mm-hmm. Right. So they had Pima Community College had 70,000 students during the recession, and now they're down to, I think it's 40,000.
Oh, wow.
Because when your economy's humming, you're out in the field, you're working. When it's not, you're kind of doubling down and growing your skills in education. It's just how it works. And so what they're doing to not only innovate education, but also just being a sustainable organization is going to companies and saying, what do you need? How do we develop workforce training around that? So I want to shout that out, because as much as we talk about what things can apply to Tucson, I think that's an area where we're really moving ahead in some exciting ways. And this also gets back to, at a national level, a lot of conversation, we'll just take the presidential election 3.5-year cycle, you look at Andrew Yang or Pete Buttigieg, they're talking about how work has changed and how, you know, when you live in a manufacturing community and that industry changes, you need opportunities to learn a new skill more rapidly to kind of handle that potential displacement in a better way. So we're looking at this fourth industrial revolution shift. Mm-hmm. It's going to displace a lot of communities and a lot of workers. How do we provide those more rapid education models to make sure that families can stay on their feet? So I think it's relevant at an urban level, and it's also relevant to what they call flyover country. I think it's relevant across the board. So
yeah, absolutely. And I think it goes back to this idea of like this smart city concept. Really the cornerstone of this is just collaboration and partnership. And so as far as like the workforce goes, that's a conversation between your community colleges and the companies that, you know, are feeders for or the community college that feeds into these various companies. But it's not just that. I mean, it's everything as far as, you know, your transportation and the services that are offered, public services and public spaces. So it just comes back to this idea of being citizen-centered and just a collaborative effort and participation and engagement from everybody.
Right. So we've got about 5 minutes left. This, well, probably more closer to 4 minutes left. Well, let's bring this close to home. What were some things that you learned about or heard and you went, Tucson's ready for that. Let's do that in Tucson. What were one or two things you went, got to do that here?
Oh, man.
I know. I'm asking you the hardest question this whole interview.
You know, I tried to prepare for this one and I don't. Let me just think here. So, I mean, I think this is really important. You know, this concept is really important for everybody. But I think in Tucson specifically, there's such a mistrust in government, even down to the local scale. And I think implementing the smart city concept and, you know, getting to the heart of this, which is collaboration, communication, I think that's where we need to start, right? So everything, I think, is a conversation. And so having conversations between our local government and our communities and your private companies and the nonprofit sector, everybody, I think I'm thinking about this concept and I'm thinking about Tucson. And that, to me, is the starting point. That's what we need. That is what's going to, I think, move us forward. Once we have that transparency and that trust established, we can kind of go from there and kind of like streamline this process of getting everything else running more smoothly.
Gotcha. Any other maybe kind of infrastructure idea or I totally agree with you on the conversation point. Any tangible ideas that you think could be done?
Green spaces. So we live in the desert, obviously, but you know, there are parks here, they're not very well maintained all the time. So, you know, shout out to Tucson Parks and Rec, you guys are killing it. It's a hard job. But I think green spaces is an easy place to start, right? That could be on rooftops, that could be on street corners, that could be anywhere. And so that was a big part of this. It helps with the aesthetic, it's better for the environment, and it brings people together when you have those communal spaces. So I think that's a very tangible place to start as far as just rolling something out that people can see. And yeah, I mean, it's a win for everybody.
Yeah. I think in Tucson, I'm excited about a specific element of the Sunshine Mile, and that is bus rapid transit. So our new transportation director Diana Alarcon helped to kind of shrink some of the lanes on Broadway and to make sure that that bus rapid transit, which is, it's not a part of traffic, it's alongside of traffic. So there's specific like lanes and speedier bus rapid transit and the expansion of the streetcar, which I know is kind of underway. That's super necessary. And then let me throw this one at you. I talked about it on the air. No one's taken me up on it yet, but it's going to happen. And that is, you know how they are, they have a, what do they call it? Where they're doing a 40-hour training with people to go into parks and kind of man parks in a security way. They pay you $15 an hour, blah, blah, blah. I think we should have that for planning. I think we should have trained community planners that assist our planning and development services department, where they get trained on the basic kind of community facing levels of zoning and planning and permitting and things like that. But they are neighbors. They're people like you and I that are more in tune to that community conversation and do the same thing we did with the parks, the park patrols, and do it with planning.
I mean, I think that's a really excellent idea. I think it shifts some of the accountability from the city in directly into the community and the people who benefit from that space. So anything we can do to instill like some sense of ownership and some like, you know, appreciation on the part of the people using those spaces to kind of care for it and move it forward and just be in the loop about like what's going on. I think that's a great idea. I don't know why no one's taking you up on it yet.
It's going to happen.
Yeah,
I'm not worried about
it.
It's going to happen. especially as our, the city of Tucson just hired a new planning development services director. So it's Scott Clark. He moved from interim to full time. And so I think it's a timely conversation. It's going to happen. I'm not even worried about it. this has been my conversation with Amanda Bruno, a master's in public administration candidate from the University of Arizona, talking about her visit to New York City specifically for the Smart Cities Conference that was there last week. I guess in closing, if someone wants to research this term more or look at ways it could be implemented here, what's a good site to go to?
Yeah, so I'm actually going to recommend a book, if that's okay.
Yeah.
So there is a book called Smart Cities, Smart Futures, and okay. That was by Mike Barlow. So he was one of the speakers, and the book looks great.
Awesome. Amanda, thank you for your time. Your first day back into in Tucson. I appreciate it. It's been a great conversation. And I really, really, really hope that Tucson can keep you around when you graduate.
Thanks for having me.
It's a goal. It's a goal. It's going to happen. Hopefully by helping you implement the things you learned here.
I sure hope so.
Awesome. Thank you. Tucson, if you missed any of my conversation with Amanda, go to kvoy.com/podcast to hear. Exciting to hear about what happened in New York City and how it can be brought back to Tucson. Well, Tucson, we are just about done here on the Creative City Show on 1030 The Voice, but we are just getting started with this local lineup today. The Buckmaster Show will take you through lunch coming up at noon, the Monday political face-off, and then the closing with a Monday interview with the Sahuarita Unified School District Superintendent Manny Valenzuela. It's going to be a good hour on Buckmaster. Tune in tomorrow at 10 for the Tuesday edition of the Creative City Show. Thanks for listening. Thanks for chatting. I'll see you tomorrow.